Welcome to the Connecticut Freedom Trail. This tour takes you to North Central Connecticut, where we explore sites in Hartford, Newington, Middletown, Manchester, Bloomfield, Windsor, and Enfield. Specific directions to each Freedom Trail site and suggestions on how to get the most out of this auto tour tape series are in the companion booklet. At the end of each site description on this tape, you will hear this tone.
For 350 years, in the big cities and small towns of Connecticut, there has been a little-known struggle for freedom and equality. From the founding of the Connecticut colony, people of African descent faced slavery and racial discrimination. But from the earliest days, some Connecticut residents, both people of color and white people, have fought against racial prejudice and oppression. The Connecticut Freedom Trail commemorates their struggle. These are the stories of the formation of black churches and community organizations, the anti-slavery author Harriet Beecher Stowe, the role of black soldiers in the Civil War, the impact on the young Martin Luther King of a summer working in Connecticut, the first state civil rights organization in the United States, the Underground Railroad, the nation's first black congressman, and the great African-American performer Paul Robeson. About 2% of the Connecticut colony's population were blacks, mostly slaves who worked as servants or farm laborers living in their owners' households. Many of the oldest and most prestigious Hartford families had slaves. Starting in the 1780s, Connecticut began a gradual abolition of slavery, and over the next half century, many blacks migrated from rural areas to Hartford. Here they created a small but strong black community which built its own institutions and led the fight against slavery and for equal rights.
The first site on the north central section of the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Old State House in Hartford.
Long Connecticut's capital and now a museum, the Old State House played a role in many of the key events affecting blacks in Connecticut. For example, when Prudence Crandall opened a school for black girls in Canterbury, Connecticut, the so-called Black or Crandall Law against schools for blacks was passed and later repealed in the House of Representatives located on the upper level. Crandall, recently designated Connecticut State Heroine, will be commemorated at the Old State House by a gold statue on top of a flagpole on the south side of the building. The Amistad Africans, who were captured in Sierra Leone, revolted and seized the ship that was carrying them in Cuba, reached Connecticut, and ultimately were declared free by the United States Supreme Court, were tried here. The case was heard in the Senate chambers on the upper level, which has been restored to appear exactly as it did when the Amistad captives filled the room while Roger Sherman Baldwin argued their case. A statue of their leader, Sing K, now stands atop the flagpole at the main entrance. When anti-slavery activist John Brown was hanged for his raid on the government arsenal at Harper's Ferry, Virginia, a black man from Hartford and a white man from New Haven secretly climbed to the Old State House's cupola and draped the Statue of Justice in black as a bitter public comment on Brown's execution. This Statue of Justice can now be examined close up on the upper level of the Old State House.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Wadsworth Athenaeum in Hartford.
The Wadsworth Athenaeum, which is the nation's oldest continuously operating public art museum, has two major galleries concerned with black history and culture. the Amistad Foundation Gallery presents changing exhibitions and special interpretive programs based on the Foundation's unique collection of over 6,000 art objects, posters, broadsides, photographs, memorabilia, and rare books that evidence the many contributions of African Americans to American culture. The Fleet Gallery of African American Art presents the contribution of African American visual artists to American art and culture. Artists in its permanent collection include Romare Bearden, Alan Rohane Crite, Robert Scott Duncanson, Alma Thomas, and Richard Barté.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Soldiers and Sailors Monument in Hartford.
From the outbreak of the Civil War, Connecticut African Americans had pushed for the creation of black military units. Joseph Shelton, a white anti-slavery activist and a member of the Underground Railroad, wrote to Governor Buckingham that blacks in Bridgeport, Hartford, and New Haven wanted to form military drill units. Buckingham refused.
The time may yet come when a regiment of colored men may be profitably employed, but now it would create so much unpleasant feeling and irritation that more evil than good would result.
So Shelton and a group of Connecticut blacks created their own secret military organization and drilled in secret. After Lincoln's Emancipation Proclamation, Connecticut started to raise a black regiment. The 29th Connecticut Volunteer Infantry was composed of escaped slaves from the South and free blacks from Connecticut, including many of those who had secretly drilled under Joseph Shelton. 128 black soldiers from Hartford fought in the 29th Regiment and in the subsequently organized 31st Regiment. Alexander Newton, son of a freed slave, was one of those who enlisted in the 29th Regiment.
All the soldiers of the 29th Regiment, although dark-skinned, felt the full responsibility of their mission. We had the same muscle, the same strength, the same heart, the same conscience as the white man. We were fighting under the same flag and the same God. I remember the words of General Saxon. Boys, if you want to make good soldiers, you must look a white man straight in the face and let him know you are a man. This gave us fresh courage to press forward as soldiers to certain victory.
Supporters of black rights believed the participation of blacks in military service would transform the way they were viewed by whites. Augustus Brandegee, a United States congressman from New London and an active abolitionist, wrote,
"The conduct of a Negro regiment on the field would do more than all our pulpits toward dispelling the unchristian and inhuman prejudices which still exist against the race in this state."
Yet even while black soldiers from Connecticut were fighting in the Union Army, Connecticut voters turned down an amendment to the state constitution to give black men the right to vote, a right they would only acquire 5 years later under the 15th Amendment to the United States Constitution. The Soldiers and Sailors Monument was dedicated in 1886 to honor the 4,000 Hartford residents who served in the Civil War and the 400 who died for the Union. In 1986, a marker noting the contributions of African Americans in that conflict was added on the column closest to the Capitol building. On display inside the nearby state capitol across the lawn are two banners that were used by Connecticut's all-black 29th Regiment.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Harriet Beecher Stowe Center in Hartford.
So, you are the little woman who wrote the book that made this great war.
Abraham Lincoln was reported to have said that when he first met Harriet Beecher Stowe. He was referring to her novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin, which was directed against the brutality and injustice of slavery. Published in 1852, it sold more than 1 million copies by the end of the next year and had a huge impact on public opinion regarding slavery. Stowe wrote a response to critics of Uncle Tom's Cabin, many other novels, and even congregational hymns. Harriet Beecher Stowe lived in Hartford from 1864 until her death in 1896. Her home, now a museum, appears today much as it did when she lived there. It includes her writing table, paintings, family memorabilia, period furnishings, and historic gardens. It and the neighboring Catherine S. Day House, which contains exhibit galleries and a research library, today form the Harriet Beecher Stowe Center. The house of writer and slavery opponent Mark Twain stands nearby.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Frank T. Simpson House in Hartford.
In 1944, Connecticut established an interracial commission, the first such state civil rights agency in the United States. Its first employee and its director until 1960 was Frank Simpson. A commission study published in 1946 showed both the progress made by Connecticut African Americans and the discrimination they continued to face.
The Interracial Commission has assisted directly in the placement of many Negroes in responsible positions. The results of these efforts can be seen in the increased use of Negroes as office workers, retail clerks, and skilled workers in manufacturing plants. In 1940, there were only 16 Negro stenographers, typists, and secretaries employed in the entire state. Today, 71 Negroes are employed in many kinds of offices. There were no Negro sales clerks in major department stores in 1943, but there are now 39 Negroes employed in sales and clerical positions. In 1943, there were no Negroes in any school of nursing in Connecticut, except at Yale University. Now there are only 5 among the 19 nursing schools which have not expressed willingness to accept qualified applicants without regard to race, religion, or national origin.
The commission surveyed the 9 municipalities where most Connecticut blacks lived.
Of these 9 places, only Bridgeport has Negro firemen, only Hartford has Negro librarians, only 3 cities have Negro teachers, and only 4 places have Negroes in administrative or clerical positions with the municipal government.
Frank Simpson was born in Florence, Alabama in 1907 and came to study at the Hartford Seminary in 1929, where he received 2 master's degrees. He stayed in Hartford as a social worker for 15 years before going to work as the first staff member of the state's new Interracial Commission in 1944. In 1952, he and his wife Marie Simpson bought this house across from Keeney Park on Keeney Terrace, which is now on both the Freedom Trail and the National Register of Historic Places.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is Faith Congregational Church in Hartford.
In most of the Baptist, as well as other chapels, they have, as a matter of course, the Negro pew. This was the most objectionable one I had ever seen, with sides so high it was almost impossible to see the minister or the rest of the congregation.
Jeremiah Asher was the grandson of a slave who fought in the American Revolution and was thereupon granted his freedom. He was a Baptist. And when he moved to Hartford, he was unhappy to find the Baptist church where he worshipped was segregated. Many Hartford blacks objected to the segregation of their churches, and in 1819, they began to organize.
There was a place where colored persons of all denominations were in the habit of meeting for worship.
After meeting weekly for a year with a black minister, the emerging black congregation organized a Sunday school for children of color. 6 years later, they decided to establish their own house of worship.
We, the undersigned, desirous of enjoying this privilege as a distinct people and preparing the way for others of our depressed nation to enjoy like blessings, do hereby form the African Religious Society of Hartford.
Several of Hartford's black churches can trace their roots to the African Religious Society. Methodist members, for example, formed Hartford's Zion's Methodist Episcopal Church. And Baptist members eventually returned to what is today Central Baptist. Congregationalist members formed the Colored Congregational Church, which became known as the Talcott Street Church. Today, called the Faith Congregational Church, it is included on the Freedom Trail in recognition of its long-standing role as a center for black self-help and struggle for equality. The church opened Hartford's first school for black children. Hartford poet Ann Plato and photographer Augustus Washington were among the teachers at the church's school. The church raised money for anti-slavery campaigns and sponsored lectures by such well-known anti-slavery activists as Henry Highland Garnett and William Lloyd Garrison. Its most famous pastor was the Reverend James W.C. Pennington. Born the slave Jim Pembroke in Maryland, at the age of 20, he ran away from his master and escaped to Philadelphia. He was directed to a Quaker who told him,
"Well, come in and take thy breakfast and get warm, and we will talk about it. Thee must be cold without any coat. Come in and take thy breakfast and get warm."
It was while living with this friend and by his kind attention in teaching me that I acquired my first knowledge of writing, arithmetic, and geography.
Pennington eventually became not only a minister, but also the author of numerous articles and books, including a textbook history of the origin and history of the colored people, published in Hartford, and an autobiography, The Fugitive Blacksmith. But even as an ordained minister and the leader of a Hartford congregation, Reverend Pennington was not safe. John Hooker, an abolitionist lawyer in Hartford, recounted how once Reverend Pennington came to him for a confidential consultation, starting a process in which, ironically, Hooker, for a short time, became Pennington's owner.
He told me that he was a fugitive slave, and that he had never divulged the fact to any of his people in Hartford, nor even to his wife, and that it was known to nobody but the Quaker friends in Pennsylvania who had sheltered him at the time of his escape, and had afterwards aided him in getting an education.
Reverend Pennington asked John Hooker to negotiate with his owner for his freedom. Meanwhile, they agreed it would be wisest if Pennington left for Canada and eventually for Europe.
He found warm friends wherever he went, and on visiting Heidelberg in Germany, was made a Doctor of Divinity by the university there.
"You are the first African who has received this dignity from a European university. And it is the University of Heidelberg that thus pronounces the universal brotherhood of humanity."
In Scotland, friends of Pennington raised the money to have him manumitted, that is, freed from bondage. But John Hooker discovered that in the interim, Pennington's master had died. The administrator of his master's estate told Hooker that he had no power to free him, but could only sell him as a slave.
My junior law partner at once went to Maryland, carrying the money, and took a bill of sale to me. I thus became a slaveholder and the owner of a doctor of divinity. On receiving the bill of sale, I held it for a day to see what the sensation would be, and then executed a deed of manumission, which I had recorded in the town records. It set free my slave, Jim Pembroke, otherwise known as Reverend James W.C. Pennington, Doctor of Divinity. It stands on record there for the wonder of future generations.
Reverend Pennington returned to Hartford and became a major leader in the struggle against slavery and for African-American equality. The Colored Congregational Church was built in 1826 and was long known as the Talcott Street Church. In 1953, it merged with the Mother Bethel African Methodist Episcopal Church to become the present Faith Congregational Church, and the next year moved to the present building on Main Street. Across the street is the Metropolitan AME Zion Church, also a descendant of the original African Religious Society.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is Union Baptist Church in Hartford.
In the years after the Civil War, black migrants began trickling into Hartford from Essex County, Virginia. They met in each other's homes to pray, study the Bible, and socialize. In 1871, they began to meet in a boxcar located on Spruce Street. As the congregation grew, it moved several times, coming to the present location on Main Street in 1925. The Union Baptist Church, through its leaders and members, made significant contributions to the early civil rights movement on the local and state levels. The Reverend John C. Jackson, who began his ministry at the church in 1922, worked tirelessly to open up employment opportunities for African Americans, especially for teachers and social workers. Reverend Jackson helped establish the Connecticut Interracial Commission, now the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities. The first African American teacher in the Hartford public school system was Edith Taylor, a member of the church. The first African Americans in the city to serve in the police department and the first to be members of the welfare board and the police department were members of the church. The church has been a driving force in both the Hartford branch of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP, and the local chapter of the Urban League. In 1944, a 15-year-old Martin Luther King spent the summer working on a tobacco farm near Simsbury, Connecticut. His experiences in integrated restaurants, halls, and churches, including the Union Baptist and Shiloh Baptist churches in Hartford, made a profound and lasting impression on him. In letters only recently published, he wrote home,
"Dear Father, on our way here, we saw some things I had never anticipated to see. After we passed Washington, there was no discrimination at all. The white people here are very nice. We go to any place we want to and sit anywhere we want to. Dear Mother, I am doing fine and still having a nice time. We went to church Sunday in Simsbury, and we were the only Negroes there. Negroes and whites go to the same church.
After a weekend trip,
Dear Mother, yesterday we didn't work, so we went to Hartford. We really had a nice time there. I never thought that a person of my race could eat anywhere, but we ate in one of the finest restaurants in Hartford. Then we went to the largest shows there."
William Pickens, who came from Atlanta and became a friend of King's at the camp, recalled,
"It was just an unfamiliar situation that one could chat with a white person who was a peer. And they were workers just like we were, and we could talk with them briefly during lunchtime and not get taken to jail for it.
Years later, King recalled his return from Connecticut to the segregated South.
It was a bitter feeling going back to segregation. It was hard to understand why I could ride wherever I pleased on the train from New York to Washington, and then had to change to a Jim Crow car at the nation's capital in order to continue the trip to Atlanta.
King's experiences in the North stayed with him. He later referred to his experience in Connecticut in 1944 as formative.
I felt an inescapable urge to serve society, a sense of responsibility which I could not escape.
I say to you today, my friends, that in spite of the difficulties and frustrations of the moment, I still have a dream. It is a dream deeply rooted in the American dream. I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
The relative freedom that Martin Luther King experienced as a youth in Connecticut was one early source of that dream.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is North Cemetery in Hartford.
About 180,000 African Americans fought in the Civil War. More than a third of them were killed or wounded. Located next to the Union Baptist Church, in the back center of the North Cemetery, are the graves of African Americans who fought in the Civil War. Stones mark the graves of at least six men who served in Connecticut's all-black 29th Regiment, as well as graves of other African-American Civil War veterans.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Brace Stephen House in Newington.
The Underground Railroad was a network of safe houses and anti-slavery activists who helped fugitive slaves escape to freedom. One route ran up the Connecticut River through Middletown and Hartford to Springfield and Westfield, Massachusetts. Fugitive slaves could be seized and sent back to their masters, and those who aided them were committing a crime, so the Underground Railroad was cloaked in secrecy. Nonetheless, some of the Central Connecticut safe houses, called stations on the Underground Railroad, and some of the abolitionist participants, called station masters and conductors, are known or suspected. Reverend Joab Brace, who lived in Newington's Brace Stephen House, is believed to have provided shelter there for runaway slaves. There is a space built into the chimney in the cellar of the house which could have served as a place for slaves to hide.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is West Burying Ground in Middletown.
Fanny Beeman was probably one of the founders of the Colored Female Anti-Slavery Society of Middletown, the second women's abolition society in the United States. She was also the mother of Amos Beeman, one of Connecticut's best-known African-American civil rights leaders of the 19th century. Fanny Beeman's grave lies to the rear of Middletown's West Burying Ground. Civil War veterans who served in the Connecticut 29th Regiment, as well as other African American units, are also buried here. One of them is James Powers, whose name is included on the Civil War monument found on the green at South Main Street near the Benjamin Douglas House. Photographs of James Powers and some of the other African American soldiers buried in Middletown can be found at the Middlesex County Historical Society in Middletown. A monument to Henry Clay Work, a Middletown native, can also be found on Middletown's green. Henry Clay Work wrote anti-slavery songs like Wake Nicodemus, The Year of Jubilee, and Marching Through Georgia, which stirred the abolitionist movement and the Union Army.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Benjamin Douglas House in Middletown.
The brothers Benjamin and William Douglas ran a highly successful pump shop in Middletown. They were strong abolitionists, and their establishment became known as the Cradle of Liberty. At an 1834 meeting at their pump shop, an abolitionist minister declared,
"My fellow abolitionists, slavery is but a sore that is slowly festering as we in the North sit idly by and watch as our brothers of color labor hard. If this sore is not healed, it will lead to the destruction of this nation. We must speak out as loud as we can against this very sore, for if we do not act now, we will pay with blood later."
A yelling crowd gathered outside.
"Get those niggers out of town. They'll ruin our country.
Darkies don't belong here. This is our country."
The crowd threw rocks through the windows and burst into the meeting room, pelting speakers with eggs and buckets of water. Notwithstanding the unpopularity of his abolitionist views with some Middletown residents, Benjamin Douglas became mayor of the city and lieutenant governor of the state. His house was a stop on the Underground Railroad.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Hart Porter Homestead and Outbuilding in Manchester.
This house was built around 1840 by Hart Porter. According to local tradition, the location served as a stop on the Underground Railway. Fugitive slaves were kept hidden in the outbuilding cellar, which was reached by a concealed trapdoor. They were periodically brought into the attic of the main house to eat and warm themselves around the chimney.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Francis Gillette House in Bloomfield.
Francis Gillette was a temperance and educational reformer and a strong abolitionist. As a state legislator, he supported a bill to give Connecticut blacks the right to vote, and as a United States senator, he voted against the Kansas-Nebraska Act, which would have opened unorganized territories to slavery. In 1853, Gillette and his brother-in-law, the Farmington abolitionist John Hooker, bought Nook Farm, which became a center of Hartford cultural activity and the home of such noted literary opponents of slavery as Harriet Beecher Stowe and Mark Twain. Gillette's large house in Bloomfield was made of uncut stone from a nearby mountainside. It served as a stop on the Underground Railroad. According to a local history published after the Civil War,
Francis Gillette welcomed and gave shelter for a night to the flying slave, whose stories and songs, as he warmed and cheered himself by the fire, made a lifelong impression upon his young listeners.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is Nancy Toney's grave in Windsor.
There were black slaves in Windsor as early as 1680, and slave trading is believed to have been conducted on the Palisado Green. The same area may later have been a stop on the Underground Railroad. Only a few slaves remained in Connecticut by the time the state passed its full emancipation law in 1848. Apparently, several of these individuals were considered too aged to care for themselves and therefore continued with their former owners. It is believed that Nancy Toney, a former slave of the Chafee Loomis family of Windsor, was the last survivor of this group in Connecticut. When she died in 1857, she was buried in the Palisado Cemetery. The cemetery is right next to the First Church of Windsor and across the street from the Windsor Historical Society. The Chafee Loomis House still stands in the center of town and currently serves as a bank.
The next site on the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Joseph Rainey House in Windsor.
A liberated slave in the Speaker's chair. A liberated slave in the Speaker's chair.
So read the headline in the New York Herald when Joseph Rainey, the first African American ever to serve in the United States House of Representatives, also became the first black to preside over the House in the absence of the Speaker. Joseph Rainey's father was a South Carolina barber who managed to purchase his and his family's freedom. In 1862, Joseph Rainey was conscripted by the Confederate Army. He and his wife fled to Bermuda, where he became a prominent barber and she became a prominent dressmaker. After the war, they returned to South Carolina, where he became a United States congressman and was reelected four times. He delivered major speeches in support of civil rights legislation and supported not only the rights of blacks, but also of American Indians and the Chinese in California. He dramatized his stand on the issue of access to public accommodations by his refusal to leave the dining room of a hotel in Suffolk, Virginia, forcing the owners to remove him from the premises. Rainey bought his home in Windsor, Connecticut in 1874 and owned it for the remainder of his life. It was used by his family as a summer residence. The Rainey family was active in the First Church of Windsor just down the road from his home, and in 1876, Rainey spoke at the town's observance of the American Centennial Celebration.
The last site on the north-central section of the Connecticut Freedom Trail is the Paul Robeson House in Enfield.
What is America to me? A name, a map, the flag I see. A certain word, a democracy. What is America to me?
Paul Robeson was an All-American football player, a Phi Beta Kappa scholarship student at Rutgers University, and a graduate of the Columbia University Law School. He became internationally known as an actor, singer, and civil rights activist. Robeson owned his home in Enfield, Connecticut from 1940 until 1953. This impressive Greek Revival structure was built in 1850 and rebuilt in 1906 after a fire. Called the Beeches for its beech tree plantings, it is now part of Enfield's National Register Historic District. Robeson was an enormously popular figure in the 1930s and 1940s, but by the 1950s, his political views became unpopular. He was barred from appearing at concert halls, had his passport revoked, and saw his name removed from the football records he had established. When Robeson came to perform at Hartford's Bushnell Auditorium in 1942, he was greeted with enthusiasm. Besides his great power as a singer, his presence helped motivate the public on the home front during World War II, due in part to his well-known anti-fascist political stance. 10 years later, when he came to perform at Hartford's Weaver High School, the performance created a maelstrom among those who rejected his left-wing views and who felt that someone with his views should not be allowed to perform and espouse his views in a public building. The Board of Education resisted pressure to cancel the concert and allowed Robeson to perform.
Like every true artist, I have longed to see my talent contributing in an unmistakably clear manner to the cause of humanity. The artist must take sides. He must elect to fight for freedom or for slavery. I have made my choice. I had no alternative.
In 1995, Robeson was posthumously inducted into the College Football Hall of Fame.
The house I live in, my neighbors white and black, the people just came here or from generations back, the town hall and the soapbox, the torch of liberty, a place to speak my mind out. That's America to me.
From Newington to Manchester, from Middletown to Enfield, respect and equality for African Americans have required a continuing struggle. A struggle conducted by people like Fannie Beeman, Harriet Beecher Stowe, Frank Simpson, and Paul Robeson. The Freedom Trail commemorates that struggle.
This concludes your tour of the North Central section of the Connecticut Freedom Trail.